You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 11th, 2022. And if my child isn't better than me, we'll just reroll stats later.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alborn.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And let me talk to you about past generations through the ages.
Mitochondrial Eve.
It seems like it did happen generations ago. And in many real ways, we are very different people than we were back then when we were children. But back then, a prior generation of people played a little game called Rogue Legacy.
Oh, man. So Rogue Legacy came out in 2013, we discovered. Ooh. Almost a decade ago.
Man, 2013. What were we doing? Probably like listening to Mumford Sons and just getting drunk or something? Like.
Oh, my God. Yeah, sad but true.
So Rogue Legacy 2 hit a 1.0 release recently, over the past couple weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
And we've been playing a few hours of it. I mean, it's one of those games that you could really dump a lot of hours into. So
yeah.
Who knows when we will be quote-unquote done with Rogue Legacy 2. But we figured now is as good a time as any to talk about initial impressions and just how the game's been treating us. So I guess the question is... Well, you asked me this. What do you remember about Rogue Legacy 1?
So, great segue, because I was just about to say, I was talking to someone the other day, and they asked me, oh, well, you know, how are you liking Rogue Legacy 2? And I said, it's fine. It feels like more Rogue Legacy. Because in my mind, that's what it feels like. Like, just more Rogue Legacy. I have now since watched gameplay of Rogue Legacy 1, and I completely forgot everything about Rogue Legacy 1. Like, apparently in Rogue Legacy 1, you only had a sword. Like, that was your whole dude. Maybe did they add it in, like, future patches or something? Other heroes?
I don't think so.
That's so wild to me. Like, or I'm watching this, and it looks like someone made this game in the 80s. Like, the graphics are weird and old. Like, all of it feels so... In my mind's eye, I'm just playing Rogue Legacy again. That's clearly not the case. But what I will say is, I think it's a testament to how just buttery smooth and just how naturally good it feels to play this game, no matter which type of hero you're playing. Because unlike the first game where you just had access to a sword character, at this point I've unlocked the archer, the warrior, the chef, the rogue, the like assassin, and the like Valkyrie. And there are yet more. Like, I see that there's a boxer unavailable to me. There's some dude in, like, a weird Japanese hat. Like, there's a bunch of different classes. Yep. But I think no matter which one you play, it feels good. It feels like Rogue Legacy.
Which, again, we've demonstrated that we may not even know what Rogue Legacy feels like. Because I think one of the other things, they definitely had the kind of DuckTales, like, down pogo attack in the first one. But I really feel like they kind of... I think they expanded on that a lot in Rogue Legacy 2.
Well, so in Rogue Legacy 1, I believe you could just swing your weapon down when you were attacking, which would sort of bounce you up and do an attack. And this one, it's a spin kick. I imagine because, of course, you don't only have a sword, right? Like, what does this look like if you're an archer or something, right?
Or a chef.
but you're right, though, because different characters will unlock different augmentations to that. Yeah. And then you said you've defeated the first boss so far.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. When you get... At various points in Rogue Legacy 2, you enter into what seem kind of like optional challenge areas where they give you a new ability. And if you can complete that area, then you get that new ability permanently. And one of them is to use your sort of down attack or your bounce to kill certain enemies or jump off of certain projectiles that are sort of, they almost have like a little glowing aura around them. And that becomes fundamental. Like, the boss fight that I'm at now, you have to have that ability and you have to really kind of master that ability to fight this boss with any degree of skill. Like, all of the projectiles that she makes, well, not all of them, but pretty much almost all of them are these like huge balls. So you have to time it right and you have to practice that. And so you're right. It's far more robust than the first one because they know now that this is a skill that you need to employ. as the game progresses, and we could build towards that, which is pretty cool because it means that you're going to need to be reading your landscape a little bit more intelligently.
Yeah. I mean, it's and even just like using it to traverse, I feel like, as you know, like bouncing off of those spikes or, you know, the bramble, the kind of the bramble spikes, and they like explicitly tell you that like the hitbox of this thing goes left and right too. So, you know, if you're trying to climb or if you're trying to attack an enemy, like you can attack laterally, and like they remind you of that several times basically. So it's like they I mean, it's just it really is a really natural feeling extension. So natural that it feels like it was there the whole time. You know, it's I mean, this, I guess it's not a surprise, but what it reminds me a lot of is, well, in both ways, I played the freeware version of Spelunky a lot before I played Spelunky HD, and that was one of those things where when I played it, I was like, whoa, so like so much change and it's crazy. But then eventually my brain just kind of melded where it's like, oh yeah, that was always in Spelunky, right? Right? And it wasn't like there was definitely new elements. And I think they did the same thing with Spelunky 2, where it's like you start to think of things in Spelunky 2 as, you know, items or, you know, passageways or whatever as, oh yeah, this is just part of Spelunky. When it's like, oh no, this is like exclusive to Spelunky 2. It's just such a gradual transition that your brain just sees it as a unified experience.
Yeah. And when you add these elements that fit so naturally in the environment, you know, when you encounter them, nothing is surprising, right? Like you feel prepared. I think to me, that's also a testament to the way that the game teaches you, right? Like this game, a lot of roguelikes, or roguelites, I guess in this case, I think are really compelling because the way that they onboard you into the world is done very kind of gradually. It doesn't, I don't know how you feel so far. I mean, I know that you can go to certain areas that are more challenging, but it doesn't feel like there's a huge difficulty spike. Like I'm in maybe at the third boss and, you know, I'm moving along and it's challenging, but it's challenging in the same way that like I would expect it to be because I'm better. Yes, I have more stats, but more importantly, I'm also just thinking differently. I'm understanding the landscape differently. Yeah. I will still die in the first world sometimes if I'm thoroughly exploring it. But, you know, for the most part, I can get through that third world with no problem. And it's never really felt like it's out of bounds, right? And as they're adding these new mechanics that you are then using fundamentally in the next world, it's given in a very intelligently paced way.
Yeah,
Which I really appreciate.
Yeah, I think that stuff is well done, and you know, it kind of gives you a sense of like, you know, this is a difficult area, but like there's a way through it, or I could just go try another thing, and you know, I'll have different, you know, a different set of experiences or whatever that will allow me to be a little better next time. There's just a lot of subtle little things. I mean, even like comparing it to the other game, like, so many more and different types of like metagame unlocks, you know, when you're building up the castle.
Yeah.
I mean, the castle is just massive compared to the other one. And the other one wasn't any slouch, but like there's just so many other powers and items and such to unlock.
Well, and this is also where you unlock all of your health upgrades, most of your damage upgrades, all of the new classes.
Yep.
You can add like new NPCs to the world. There's a guy that, for example, locks the world.
Yeah.
Which I've not done that much.
No. Have you?
It kind of defeats the purpose of roguelikes, though, right? Like,
yeah,
I
was thinking about it because, you know, those there's that new feature where it's a, what do they call them? Fairy chess.
Where you the challenge rooms?
Yeah, the challenge rooms that like, oh, you know, don't take damage or like defeat all the enemies. It's like if you really wanted to try one of those again, I could see like, hey, I know exactly where this room is. Let's lock it and, you know, give me another go at it, basically.
I wonder if it's mostly for boss rushes where it's like, okay, you know where the boss is, you want to just be able to get there but still get your power-ups. I don't know if it locks the power-ups though. Do you know?
I don't recall. Okay. I should experiment a little bit more with it because right now, like, the way that I approached the game was I just want to unlock all the classes. I mean, the my brain is broken, so the first thing I did was basically invested money into making money. And so I was just like, you know, anything that doubles or anything, you know, what do they call it? The life safe, you know, all that stuff to like get and keep money. And then I went straight into the classes. So I unlocked, The chef.
I like the chef a lot. Being able to deflect projectiles is awesome.
And also, like, there are some items, or I forget what they're called, that, you know, will increase the probability of food dropping. And so it's like, oh, great. So now I can, like, almost constantly be recharging my cooking so that I always have extra health to deploy at any time. You know, like, there's like a lot of smart things that are put into the new classes. The Valkyrie, I think, is pretty neat. I did unlock the Ronin. The Ronin is actually great.
Oh, like, I haven't done them yet.
It's you can attack horizontally like usual, but there's also a diagonal up and diagonal down attack, and the tip of the attack does a critical hit 100% of the time. You know, it's like a samurai. Ooh, it's like a Ghost of Tsushima, basically.
Yeah.
And so
Omae wa shinderu.
It'd be so funny if the special for that class was writing a haiku, but alas, they did not. So that's really cool. The boxer is also really cool. It reminds me a lot of the gauntlets in Hades. You know, it's that same sort of like really high DPS style play.
I gotta unlock those guys.
Yeah, it's really. I mean, you know, the drawback is that I spread the peanut butter really thin, and so like I don't have a huge amount of like health upgrades or whatever. But like, I just wanted to see all the new things. But yeah, I mean, all that stuff is great. I feel like the chef, actually, I got the furthest with.
So my one complaint, actually, with the game is I think that some of the bosses feel as though they're really designed to approach with particular characters. So interesting. Like, and I guess this is kind of my question with the power-up stuff as well, right? Yeah. So from a mechanics perspective, every now and then, especially in the first world, but this is true, I think, of all of them, you will find optional areas where you can have one of two bonuses.
Yeah.
That could augment your abilities, right? And so you might get one that says, in fact, the ones that I hate all the time are the ones that's like, you will die if you get touched at all.
Yeah.
But if you can kill 15 things, you can have a nominal increase to your health, yep. right? Another of them might say, when you crit, you heal a little bit of damage. Or when you defeat enemies, they explode into poison. Things like that, yep. right? Or extend poison effects, right? Yep. Some of the really good ones are like block the next two damage sources, period, and will recharge as you kill enemies. Like things like that are just god tier. And it feels as though I've been on runs before where as I approached the boss, I knew I didn't have a fucking chance. Just because like the RNG of what I'd gotten was hosed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the design of the bosses, I feel, are far more complex than they were in the first Rogue Legacy. And I think all of them have two phases. And so second boss is like one boss, and then there are two of the bosses in the same room at the same time. But I defeated that boss. I was having a hard time with that boss, and I defeated it so trivially because I was able to get an archer that had like bonus to poisons, and I just was above the bosses and just poison arrow, poison arrow, poison arrow. That's and so then funny. I just called it a day. Like I it was almost too easy, and it felt like there was this huge gap of like, oh, if you get the RNGesus role and really bring in like your skill set, then you're going to be great, right? So, another example, the boss that I'm currently on now, you really need to be able to sort of do that spin kick. Valkyries are just better at it because I think that their spin kick is like a wider one, or they like dive down through things, so it just gives you more options. So it definitely feels like there are character types that are stronger there, and I'm wondering if the locking the world is a way of you sort of guaranteeing you have a particular kind of experience, right? And this is true of even the different classes you pick, right? Because you mentioned the chef, but every single class comes with basically the same ability, one of the same abilities for the most part, that you can use anytime you play this class. And I think it means that they can now design bosses and levels where you're just going to have an easier time if you get a particular class. Because they have that side ability, you know?
Right.
And so, I don't know. I feel like the increased amount of variance, because there's so much more new things, including classes, means that I'm finding myself feeling like runs are spoiled or runs are too easy if I get certain abilities.
Right. You know? The swing between a good run and a busted one, whether good or bad, like the swing between busted runs is much higher.
Oh yeah,
potentially in this game.
I mean, I've retired heroes multiple times because I'm just like, what's the point? Like, I can play for another, you know. But I know I'm not going to defeat the boss, and I'm in a I want to kill the boss mood, you right. know.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
did you unlock the pacifist trait?
I don't think so. Is that in the castle? I'm in the game right now, so
it isn't. Sorry, it isn't a class. It's just a hereditary trait. So there's a pacifist trait where the character can do no damage. Your attack does zero awesome. Damage. But your gold collection is like 100%+ or something like that. So
you just slam through.
Exactly. You're just trying to scurry around in the level, getting as many treasure chests as possible before you die.
Can you destroy like crates and stuff for gold?
Yeah. Yeah. You just can't destroy. You can't hurt enemies. Like it's funny. Like you have a sign with like a peace symbol on it. So like you can whack them with the sign, but nothing happens to the enemy.
That's hilarious. That's awesome. I hope you would retire that character, you know?
I mean, that's when I realized it was like, oh, okay, so like this is meant to be a farming run, you know?
Yes,
like
exactly.
That's what they're kind of teaching you. Were there any kind of like funny hereditary traits that you've uncovered?
One of the ones that I immediately retired was everything is upside down.
Oh yeah,
like literally the whole world is awful. It makes me want to barf. It's terrible. I did a pretty good run, actually, when I had the sepia.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Everything looks mm-hmm. old-timey. That was kind of a fun one.
Yep.
I actually just played one that was actually pretty good. I played it as an archer that had, like, dwarfism. And so just extremely small.
Yes.
And it means that you can dodge attacks pretty well because you're not.
I mean, with the archer, too, that's great because you could just hide in somewhere in the corner. Yeah.
Yeah, because as an archer, you're far away anyway. So really, like, having that hitbox. There's a similar one where, like, you die you take more damage, but you can only be damaged in the heart. So you're basically black and white. You're just black except for you can see your heart. And your heart is like, you know, a tiny couple of pixels or whatever, but if you take damage, you take a lot more of it. But it means you can sort of, you know, dodge things that are far easier to dodge because they're bigger than what could hit you.
I mean, that stuff is, I like that stuff a lot from the first game, too, where, like, you figure out, like, what is a blessing or what is a curse, and sometimes it just is what it is. You know, like, there's nothing, like, good or bad. It's just, like, a character trait.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, to be fair, I remember this happening in Rogue Legacy 1 as well, right? Because I remember at some point you get the ability to, like, do damage as you dash and dash mm-hmm. more.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was just dashing left and right, you know, like that is just the great hereditary bonus that you get, you know.
There was one that I unlocked. It was, I think it was synesthesia, which is like you can like sound and color are kind of combined. Like it's a real thing that some people can kind of like see sound and it like is represented as colors. And
dude, I'm jealous of that. That sounds rad.
It was funny because it basically creates a trail of your character across the level, and so like you can kind of see.
What color do you think seagulls are? Just like a grating bright pink.
Yeah, exactly. Something that just hurts your eyes. So it was like a combination of the sepia tone stuff and like an overlay where you can kind of see in a Super Meat Boy style thing. You can see your path through the level as you go, which I thought was kind of cool. God, what else?
Are you engaging with the story at all? Because the NPCs also talk a lot more in Rogue Legacy.
They really do. Well, and even inside the levels too, like there's so many journals and all of that stuff. Like the lore is much more in depth in this one. I mean, I realized that I needed to be reading a little bit more because even in that first level, to open the boss, there's like a very light puzzle, you know, to open it, which is clear when you look at it, but the tips for that puzzle are in those journals, you know, so you do have to actually read it.
Yeah. I'm definitely just like spamming, moving past them and then consulting it later if I feel the need.
The bummer is that the dialogue is actually pretty funny. Like if you read the blacksmith is talking to you or if the training dummy is talking to you or whatever, like their little quips, I think, are pretty clever.
Yes. Yeah. Another question I had was, I find that sometimes, and I don't know if this is always or what the circumstances are that result in this, but my health goes permanently down as I take damage.
As you take damage.
I think that's what's been happening. Yeah. Because I'll find myself in runs where I'm like, oh, I've got a ton of health. I'm ready to go. This is going to be great. And then halfway through the run, I'm like, what happened to all my health? I've got like 200 health.
Well, are you engaging with the, what is it called? The resolve system?
Not at all. Explain to me how this works.
Okay. So it's,
a huge, yeah. That maybe there's too many things where I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And so I just don't engage in it.
I mean, I think that's actually one of my, it doesn't ruin the game for me, but one of my critiques of the game is that it is surprisingly dense, where like there's just a lot of systems going on and not necessarily explained super clearly, which maybe is purposeful. You know, like I definitely get a kind of Elden Ring vibe off of this where it's like, how is this supposed to work? You know, like how does poise work? I don't know. Like, I guess I'll just figure it out. But like, so there's when you're looking at your health, kind of above or close to your health is a little shield. White flame that says
resolve. Yeah, okay, so 150%.
So the resolve is dictated by the weight of your armor. The lighter your armor, the more resolve you have, I believe. And then the items that you find in the level where it's like, do you want this or do you want that? Like, they cost resolve. And so if you, like, it'll say, like, hey, you can get this thing that whatever gives you extra firepower, but it's going to cost 25 resolve. If you dip beneath 100% resolve, it starts taking away your HP.
Oh, so you're basically buying things with HP.
Yeah. Or you're buying it with resolve, but the trick is that you have to equip items that give you enough surplus resolve that you don't dip beneath 100%.
Dude, I'm like so many hours in and I'm just now.
Well, I mean, I think that's my critique, where it's like it's not explained super well. And when it is explained, it's explained just in those text logs that you find. And so you really do need to read it, or else you'll just be kind of figuring it out.
I don't want to read. You know? Why do you think I'm playing video games? Come on.
So anyway, there's kind of like a hybrid of like encumbrance and stamina style thing going on.
That's so funny, because I have been buying shit that I do not need just because I'm like, well, I'm here, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it's like you're spending that resolve to get that item. But if you dip beneath 100, then you start to pay for it through HP.
Interesting. All right. Well, that makes sense.
I mean, there's just so much more. Where like the armor system is way more blown out in this game. Like,
yeah. So there's like the unity armor
sets and all that. Like, yeah.
Well, and runes, and you can tell even as well. At some point, you unlock the ability to, I guess it's actually in the settings, you can separate your builds by your class automatically.
Yeah.
So when you choose a Valkyrie, it will automatically change the runes, which are the sort of magical augmentations that you can have. And you can have a lot of them, like six or so, depending on how much you invest into that weight track of like how much shit you can carry, which is pretty wild, like that it has that layer of depth. Because you really do find yourself like, you know, I've gone into runs before where I realize, oh shit, I'm wearing the wrong armor. Like I chose to be a wizard, but I'm wearing all of my leather armor. So I'm automatically nerfing myself as a result.
Yeah. That stuff combined with the, you know, the armor and the armor sets, and there's just a lot more. There's a lot more systems. And again, I my main critique of this game is that it's a lot and it's dense, and it's not necessarily laid out in a super like UI friendly way, where it's like, what am I actually doing by unlocking this or by interacting with this, with the smith or whatever.
Well, but honestly, like, is that also just kind of antithetical to this kind of game, right? Like, part of the joy of this is that when you die, you're right back in it, right?
And yeah.
The roguelite aspect of it is that you're not, in a way, right? Like, you're investing into your character and you're building it out, and there's those RPG elements. But I agree with you. I do think that Rogue Legacy 2 veers a little bit too much into the RPG customization trend.
Yeah.
You know, or side of design, where it just slows things down for me a little bit too much.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that I notice about this game a lot is it's clearly aware of the it's aware of where the genre has gone in the last 10 years. Yeah. And it's funny because I think this game, it is pretty influential when you really think about it. You know, like this was one of the earlier one of these types of games. And in the interim, we've had things like Dead Cells, and we've had things like Hades, and we've had a bunch of other kind of roguelike, roguelite type of games, and it incorporates a lot of that stuff. Like the whole thing of like, hey, you know, kill X number of enemies to get this thing is like very much out of Dead Cells. And yeah. So, you know, it's, or even the thing around the, you know, the spin jump is like a Cuphead thing. You know, like that's like 100% like one of the main things in Cuphead, and they're repurposing it, you know, in this game, which I think is cool. Like this game is much deeper than the first one, but it's also just more complex, I guess, you know, that's natural, but it does make it a little bit trickier to get into, in my opinion.
Yeah, agreed.
Have you messed with the house rules at all?
So I was just about to say that. So I have it up right now in front of me. Mm. I have not.
Yeah.
But
because I'm a pro gamer, of course.
Well, because I'm a pro gamer. You know, I was thinking about this because they allow you to make the game harder for you also. So yeah. One of them is what?
There was like the enemy health and like damage.
Yeah, so like enemy like damage. So you can choose. Okay, so I'm going to turn house rules on. Okay, so I can increase enemy health to 200%.
That's so funny.
Double all the enemy health. You can increase the amount of damage you take. You can slow time while aiming, which is kind of a cool,
yeah, that's
if you
cool
want a slightly
modifier.
Easier one. And you don't even have to lower it all the way. You lower it in 5% increments. So if you need slightly more time to aim, which, by the way, is super helpful as the archer because I am constantly dying while aiming and stuff. There's a lot of different options to make the game easier in your own way. I think for people that are put off by the difficulty of these types of games, this is awesome. I think this gives you a lot of opportunity to choose how you want to play.
We were just talking about this stuff with Tunic and just how to approach difficulty in games in general. And I think this stuff is another kind of like how Tunic had the like, hey, we could just turn damage off and you can just continue playing, or you can turn stamina off and you can continue playing. Like this trend of like massive customization, but just putting it behind a menu, and where it's like, hey, this is super easy to ignore. If you're a hardcore idiot, fine, it's never ever going to hurt you or bother you. Whereas like, it's not going to do the Nintendo thing of like, hey champ, it looks like you're having a hard time with this. Yes. You know, like it doesn't do that. Like, so it doesn't really bother anyone, but it also gives way, way, way more customization than those like weird scalable difficulty systems of years past. It reminds me of Supergiant games, like the kind of totems, like the modifiers and or the handicap, what do they call it? God mode, the God mode stuff in Hades. You know, it's like very similar to that stuff.
Well, and especially for a game like Rogue Legacy, where so much of the depth of this game is in the ability to customize your character and be better in incremental ways. It's not like you're really ruining the game for yourself, you know? Like the game is already lets you level up and get stronger and get more health and, you know, worry about things in different ways. And so really, I think if you were to augment, like, I don't know, I'm going to add the ability to slow my aim on my arrow. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you're helping yourself out much, but it's still a minimal amount. It's not like you're not experiencing the game as, you know, as it was meant to be played.
Well, and also because they've done so much customization in the menus, that is just how the game is played for you. You know, I'm using the in-game tools to just basically, like, I really like the idea of house rules because it's very similar to the, like, hey, in this house we play Uno like this, you know, and it's like, that's just the game, you know, it's not even a modifier anymore. That just becomes the way that you play it, that rhetoric I thought was a clever way of describing that stuff.
Yeah, calling it a house rule instead.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
They should add more. Like, they should. What I would really like to do, and maybe they'll unlock this after you beat the game, but is just design your own hero. Like, give me a selection of all of the traits, and let me just see, like, what is the god tier min max?
Oh my god,
wouldn't that be cool?
That would be so cool to basically to just somewhere inside of Cellar Door Games, there's a massive spreadsheet of like all of the various, you know, traits and powers and all that stuff.
Yeah,
you know, that would be so cool to, or even just like, let you lock certain ones. It's like, I'm going to lock this trait, but randomize the other one and see what happens.
Exactly.
What sort of weird combos can I do?
Well, I just want to watch a speedrun where someone is like black and white. They're like upside down. Yeah, everything.
Farting constantly. Yeah,
double enemies, double damage. Like just absolutely nightmare mode and see see what kind of wild shenanigans people can get up to.
I guess one of the last things I wanted to talk about was, and this kind of goes back to the like, what do you remember versus what was reality? The look of this game is actually subtly different than the first game.
Well, I don't know. I mean, looking at the old footage, it doesn't seem subtle, really. It feels like they took it. It's like, what's a good way of thinking? You know how you watch like a real photo and then someone photoshopped it?
Yeah.
And the skin is smooth and there's like beautiful lighting and there's no like pores or skin. There's no actual like humanity to it. That's what it kind of feels like. Everything is sort of smoothed out. And we were talking before the show started and how at first it threw you off. It threw me off as well. It felt weird. Yeah. It felt cartoony in particular. Yes. And it felt like, oh, this is not the tone I expected or wanted.
Yeah.
I think that you only have to die like 100 times. And then you realize it's fine.
Yeah. You know, like, you do kind of get used to it where it's like, oh, okay. Like, this is just how the world is.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it does look lighthearted, but I mean, the game is lighthearted too, you know? So
it is. It's, I mean, it makes me wonder how much of that first game was a stylistic choice versus one of, hey, this is just the extent of our abilities right now. Where it's like, yes, we could spend a lot more time doing it, but like, this is just, you know, this happened in The Binding of Isaac, actually. They kind of, the game changed its look over the years. And there was some interesting kind of talk with like Edmund McMillen around like, hey, this is what the game was supposed to look like, but I just couldn't do it at the time. And so it was this very like kind of Spielberg, Lucas type of like, what is the intent versus like, does the intent even matter? You know, like...
I wonder if there's an element to the original roguelike of this is what people expect from roguelikes.
That's a good point.
Like you are paying homage to some of the more hardcore old school games. Like, you know, you're paying homage to shit like DuckTales and stuff, you know, like in your gameplay. And so I suspect that 10 years ago, there was an expectation that if you want a game that is paying homage to the more challenging roguelikes of yesteryears, it should evoke that in its aesthetic. But we've gotten so many since then with so many different art styles that now it's like, whatever, you could make fucking a Pokemon looking game and it's actually a super hardcore, deadly Dark Souls like experience for all you care, you know?
Yeah. I think like you though, it was jarring to me at first and I was like, oh, where's the charm of the kind of pixel graphics or whatever? But the more I play the game, the more I see the kind of the unified style of it. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, this actually does fit very well across all of the environments and all of the different characters and, you know, all that stuff. And it looks super smooth, too, where, like, what they've done with it is nice, you know, how everything interacts and all the projectiles and all that stuff. Like, how it comes together on the screen makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, also the music is amazing, just like it was in that first game, too.
Oh,
like
so good.
A lot of times I try to play these games and like listen to a podcast or watch a TV show or something and like I can barely bring myself to do it.
I mean, some of the boss fight music in particular too is really, really cool.
I actually
that's another complaint. I wish you could optionally choose to refight bosses in your future runs. But once you kill a boss, the door is just destroyed and you cannot.
I was thinking about that too, just to like farm, you know, like can I get gold or, you know, silver or whatever off of it. I'm looking forward to playing more of it. It's one of those dangerous games where it's like, oh boy, I can feel it. Like I could feel myself staying up until 2 a.m. to playing this game. Yeah. So like I'm cautiously playing this game just because it's just that nice to play.
Honestly, it makes me really jazzed for the next Hollow Knight game, Hollow Knight Silksong, which I think is still supposed to come out this year, I hope.
I mean, probably another one of those games that like came out, you know, in the wake of Rogue Legacy, and now we're looping back around. Well,
I think the original came out in 2017, so it's still 5 years later if it comes out later this year.
Man,
Yeah, I mean, it's already been 5 years, I think, because it came out in like February, first quarter of the year.
Got it.
So, yeah. But, and again, like, you know, there's been so many other games, like, it feels like people who want to create these types of challenging experiences, there's just more and more competition, and so everyone has to step their game up, but they're doing it. You know, like, yes. Hollow Knight is really good. Salt'n Sanctuary was really good. Like, this game is good.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm jazzed.
I mean, I think that's the difference between, you know, in I guess it's kind of like a post-Spelunky world. Like, I feel like this, I mean, it's not a surprise. I think both of us like these types of games quite a bit, but
yeah,
if you look at the grand history of the genre, several of what I consider to be the best games ever made have come out of this genre, like Spelunky, Hades, you know, those are not just good roguelikes. Like, they are just some of the best games to have ever been made. And so, like,
yeah,
seeing the innovation in this space is fascinating because, you know, it's influencing a lot of other things. Like, I think this genre influences, I mean, this genre influences shit that you see crop up in like Halo and stuff, you know? So it's like, this is the sort of stuff that is bigger places are looking at. And so it's just cool seeing what, you know, the iterations that happen over the years in the space.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, I mean, the longer we talk about it, the less time we have to play Rogue Legacy 2, so I think we will leave it there for this week.
Yep.
ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our website. We started over 10 years ago, right? Ooh. At this point?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Oh, yeah. More than that.
Holy. That means you could probably listen to our original Rogue Legacy debrief if you want to. You can find us wherever you find podcasts. Do us a favor. Spread the word. Tell a friend. You know, take your headphones out and just play it on blast to your family.
In your car, around the neighborhood.
Roll your windows down. It's summertime, baby.
All right, everyone. As always, we thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.